There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Hopeful Environmentalist, a podcast discussing hope and solutions in the climate space and providing resources for how you can take action to help create a better future for all living beings on this planet. It's your host, Taylor Gannis, and today we're going to be having a conversation with the Earth herself. Our guest today is none other than Hila the Earth. Hila the Earth is an eco-rapper, comedian, and content creator. She performs as Planet Earth and writes songs and makes videos about ecological topics that include trees, vegetables, composting, and more. So without further ado, I'd be so happy to welcome Hila to the podcast. Hey, hopeful environmentalists. Before we get into this episode, we just quickly wanted to plug in that if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a review on whatever platform you're listening on. Reviews help me not only better understand what you guys like to hear, but also gets the podcast more widely shared with other audiences. And if this is accessible to you, we do have a Patreon where you can financially support The Hopeful Environmentalist, as currently right now, The Hopeful Environmentalist is fully self-funded. For as little as $1 a month, you can help sustain the work environmentalists are doing to protect our planet. You can find that link in the description of this podcast. Your support is so greatly appreciated, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey, so hi, thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
I am so honored to be interviewing the Earth on the podcast. You know, this is like my celebrity interview that I've never gotten to do before. So honored to have you on.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So first, can you start out by telling us how did you get started with being Mother Earth?
Well, I was born, and I think everybody is the Earth. When they are born on Earth, we are all part of the interconnected web of life that is our planet. So I like to remind people that we are all the Earth, and I'm just one Earth, Hila. And yeah, I got started by performing about and making songs about ecological topics back in 2019 or 2017. And I was doing a lot of different kinds of characters at that time. I was performing with my former partner, Nathan Dufour, and we did songs about plastic and compost and zero waste lifestyle and all sorts of different like ecological topics. And then when we split, I took on the Earth persona full time in 2022.
And I love that reminder of like, we're all the Earth, because I think so many people feel like we're not a part of the Earth and we're disconnected from it. And I love that you're bringing that connection to remind people that there's still that connection and that we still are all the Earth. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, we're literally made up of the exact same materials that make up our planet. And I grew up in a very disconnected environment. Where I grew up in New York City, there wasn't even a single city tree on my block growing up. So for me, this process has been like a lot of like healing my inner child that didn't get to really feel like she was part of this natural world as much.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a challenge, is like how accessible nature is to people. And there's nature everywhere, but there's obviously more nature in certain areas, and there's more urbanized areas that have systematically been destroyed of nature. And very, very systematically done so. So thank you for bringing that up and talking about that. Because I think, again, you know, a lot of people want to have that connection. And it's important to have these conversations to be able to tell people, okay, this is where we can get nature. This is how we can make it more accessible.
Where are you on Earth?
I am located in I always call it upstate New York, but I think people think upstate is like 4 hours, but I consider upstate like an hour from the city. So I'm an hour north of New York City. So there is nature, but there's also cities, so it's more suburban, I would say.
Where? I mean, I used to live in upstate New York, so I know areas. Yeah,
I'm in Putnam County.
Okay, cool. I was living near Woodstock in the Catskills for like the last year, but I'm back in the city now.
Oh, you are? Oh, the Catskills are beautiful. I love hiking. Lots of amazing nature up there. So for anyone listening, like nature, go up to the Catskills.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting sometimes how we describe, you know, nature versus not nature. Sometimes I like to think about it as like how much biodiversity is around or how much life there is, how many trees, because really everything is nature. And that's kind of part of the like mental shift I went through, sort of recognizing that like it's not so much that there's me and then there's nature, or there's the city and then there's nature. It's that everything is nature. And the question is, what kind of nature are we experiencing? The nature of the city is very void of biodiversity and non-human life, but there's still so much nature even in the city. Yeah, that's a kind of part of the process of like, okay, how do we connect more with non-human life, with trees, with biodiversity, with birds, with bacteria, with microbes, with just life?
I think that's like the most beautiful statement I've ever heard, honestly, when it comes to nature, because I mean, I feel like I've also kind of had the attitude of, oh, well, nature is like a bunch of trees and a bunch of animals. And that is nature, but it's also like through your songs, you talk about like mycelium and all these other important topics that, you know, some people are like, oh, it's, I don't think that's nature, but it is. And I'm sometimes one of those people. I'm like, I want to go into nature. And it's like, nature can be all around us.
Yeah, that has been such an important part of my redesigning my philosophy around what is nature and how we describe it. Because that's like, you see like natural park, or you see like national parks, for example, that are designated as nature and designated as nature getaways. But these places used to just be people's homes and environments, and we have separated ourselves from that. And so I think for me, it's been super helpful to reconnect our terms and how we describe the natural world and make sure that it's fully inclusive of everything, because that way we feel more connected to it. And that's why we care more about it. Like if we designate the woods as nature or the park as nature, but then we don't designate our building as nature or our street as nature, then we're less likely to care for it. We're less likely to plant food and trees and, you know, want to invite other life into our world if we don't consider it that way. So yeah, that's what I'm hoping, that people like start thinking differently about nature versus human or nature versus man-made things, because I think we want to bridge that.
I love that. I love that so much. So kind of, I feel like a big part of that shift too is education and making things more accessible for people. Because I think a lot of people think, oh, you need to have PhD in like climate science or environmental like science to care or to know. And I don't think that's true. I think it's a lot of just making education accessible for everybody. If you have a PhD, I'm not saying you shouldn't have a PhD, just saying that it can be accessible to everybody. So how do you take these hard and complex topics that scientists are putting out and policy is getting put out, and how do you make them accessible to people who might not have been exposed to these topics?
I try to make it accessible by making it into a song, usually distilling the information into something that's like fun to listen to and dance to and engage with, not just have somebody like speak it to you, but have somebody like rap it to you or sing it to you, I think is fun. So it reaches people who maybe have less capacity for just listening to someone talk. But yeah, I like to create worlds of like fun and entertainment out of the education. So we have this term edutainment, which is the combination of entertainment and education. And that's something that is very like big part of my output and art, is to like make the content and the songs and the sketches and the comedy and all of that not just really fun to like, you know, escape into, but also super entertaining, educational and entertaining.
Yeah, no, I've shown like everybody in my life your mycelium song. Because it's such a great way to educate people. And like, I mean, I did environmental science my undergrad and I didn't even know like half of those things. So it's like, I love that you're able to reach people. And like most people in my life have not done like any type of climate or environmental or nature education. So having them interact with stuff like your music and the raps that you put out is so amazing, and seeing it like click for people and seeing that connection happen, I think is awesome.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, the Mycelium song is packed with hidden educational gems for sure. If you listen to the lyrics, I love that song. I actually want to re-release it because the version that I have on Spotify right now is like not fully mastered, I guess. And it's hard to like keep up with the demands of the music industry while trying to also like combine all these different things. But yeah, the Mycelium song is great. And mycelium and mushrooms are just such a great topic because they're like not animal, but they're not plants either. They're like this secret third thing.
So how do you see creativity and art playing a role in the climate movement and just movement building in general?
I think it plays a huge role. I think that art is such a great connector of people and ideas, and specifically music is such a thing that brings people together and is so wildly important for me in my life. So for me, like art is just, you know, it's what makes anything extremely accessible to many people, and also brings beauty and joy and inspiration. So I think it's like so important to have art in the movements. I mean, it's so like such a big part of everything that I do and what I'm attracted to when it comes to like art that is socially conscious and like has meaning and message behind it.
Yeah, 100%. I equally agree. I think art has such a way of connecting people, and there can be words, there can be no words. There's just so many different forms of art that are such great ways, and it's such a great way to bring people together and to just show what's going on in the world and movements. I love it. I love it. So for people who are listening and who have creative ideas, like similar to yours or different, just any creative idea to help the planet, but don't know how to put that into action, what would your advice be to them?
I think that spending time outside, getting to know your immediate environment around you, where you live, where you wake up, where you go to bed, like your neighbors, connecting with any mutual aid orgs, connecting with the parks, the trees, the nearest water, body of water source is kind of like just a really good way to begin the process of just being active in your own like environmental awakening. And when it comes to doing projects that are like about healing, restoration, or, you know, connecting more and more people in your community to the life that surrounds you, I would say, like, you know, there's so many different ways to do that. So find what is like most alive in you and what inspires you the most and do that. And like, if it's composting, if it's gardening, if it's feeding people, if it's learning how to capture rainwater and purify water, if it's creating events and social gatherings in your community surrounding any social justice or environmental justice issue, you know, if it's convincing your parents to replant their lawn with native species and get rid of those water-hungry grass lawns, like every little bit is helpful. And it just kind of is all about, I think, connecting with what's most inspiring and alive in you. So, because that's what you're going to show up to do with the most enthusiasm and with the most energy. And that is, there's just so many different things you can do. So yeah, I think like if I were to talk to somebody, if I were like to consult one-on-one, like I would ask those questions first and then kind of figure out where to plug your energy into the very diverse and myriad ways that you can like contribute to a better, healthier world.
I love that. And, you know, speaking of like taking action and doing things, what gives you hope for the future of our planet?
I access hope through community and connecting with people who are constantly showing up for this work and doing what I can to empower them and make them feel like they can keep going. And that gives me hope. This is still maybe a little left field, but there are Buddhist teachings that kind of equate hope with fear, hope being the opposite of fear and kind of the same as fear, actually. And there are some like teachings that say like abandon hope, because when you hope for something, your mind is kind of set in the future. And it's the same way as when you fear something, your mind is set in the future. And so being present involves just having this like kind of sense of presence and contentment with your current reality. And you might not have hope there, but you can have a lot of like joy and energy to do good and peace. And I think that when people find their inner peace, when people find their ways to be mindful, to rest, to like be the earth transforming in the present, to be alive and to honor life and to really like find life to be sacred, like you get a lot of like information and answers about what to do from that place. And you become a person in the world that doesn't do harm, somebody who benefits the world. And so, yeah, maybe it's not so much about hope, but about presence for me.
I love that, because that is something I need to work on, because I am not present ever. I am always working on 100 things and thinking about like 5 years down the line. So I think that's an important reminder that I think a lot of people think similarly to me. And like, we think so far ahead and we think all of this. And I think it's important to think ahead, but also be present. And I love that reminder.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I actually did like a silent meditation retreat. And I'll plug this really cool group that hosts like Vipassanas and silent meditation retreats for youth. And they're called Dharma Gates. And I went and did a like 6-day silent meditation retreat with them. And it was the first time I'd ever done that. And it was really impactful for me, because I basically learned to observe what my mind was doing when I was just trying to be still and present, when there was nothing else I was supposed to do other than meditate. Like, what was my mind doing? And it was so locked into the future. Like, you know, I could probably say that like there was a lot of like, I noticed either when it was in the past, reminiscing over the things that had happened, either in with a sense of regret or with a sense of like nostalgia, or I was in the future where I was either worrying about something that hasn't happened yet, creating conversations in my mind about what I'm going to say or how this scenario is going to pan out, or I'm in anxiety about worry, like, you know, being worried and feeling helpless and sad and anxious. And I just realized that all of these things were in my mind. And the only like actual reality was me in the present. And so like, as much as I could kind of come back to that and recognize my breath and recognize just what I'm doing and where I'm at, the more centered and like sort of real I felt, and like the more part of the earth and at peace, which was really powerful, actually. So yeah, I know hope is such a big part of the environmental movement, because we are kind of faced with so much anxiety and doomism and worry about the future and how the actions of, you know, very short-sighted, greedy people are impacting our entire planet. And I think that, yeah, it's going to be a shift of perspective and an awakening for many, many people to like learn what is really important and meaningful to them and how they want to live their lives. And then having the power and the strength to stand up against what has been so normalized in our society, to create a new society, to create a new economy, to use energy better, to prioritize people and experiences and nature and non-human life and, yeah, just like find solutions. So I think the more people kind of are tapped into that way of thinking, we're going to see meaningful change and like a lot of healing. So I guess that does give me hope.
I love that. And yeah, definitely we'll plug that group that you mentioned in the description. Is there anything else that you'd like to plug in the description so people can see them? Any resources or any groups that you'd like to mention that might help with grounding and being able to shift the mindset?
I mean, there's so many amazing orgs. I think it's really important to localize your activism or your actions in general, because like you're going to be so impactful where you are, and being with people and being with, like I said, with the environment that you're in is going to be really important. So I can only really speak to like different orgs and people and communities here in New York City where I live. But I would start with like, if you're wherever you are, you know, I would start with looking up where the closest community composting site is. If there's a composting drop-off, compost people are some of the best people in the world. I could talk forever about compost too, but composting, finding out who takes the food scraps and turns them back into soil, you're going to want to be connected to those people. Also community gardens, also look for thrift stores, soup kitchens, free stores, any kind of mutual aid groups, any kind of social justice and activism groups, libraries, or like just like places where people can come together for like, you know, community events. Look up those things. Farmers markets are great. Yeah, I think, you know, search for community where you are, community that is centered around healing the earth. And if you're looking for like meditation groups, yoga, like, you know, with discernment, see what vibes, you know, a lot of these movements are also co-opted in some ways. So you got to like make sure that the intentions are there, and that, you know, that's why I like to look at a lot of like mutual aid and free stores and places that don't require money as like a gateway, like a you know, an entry point. Like if you can go there for free and experience community, then like, or maybe there's some different kind of exchange, energy exchange, those are usually going to be people who are like committed to healing at, you know, at its core. So I think, yeah, that I would say that. I would say like type in your city and then any of the things that I mentioned and see what's out there.
I totally agree with like community being so important in building and finding community and supporting community, because that's where movements happen. That's where things get done. So totally agree with that. Is there anything else that you would like to bring up before we wrap up?
I'm going to be taking a like social media break, specifically from like Instagram and TikTok. And I'm going to be posting probably to my YouTube and Patreon. So yeah, I'm going to try to like kind of shift my focus to like a little bit more longer form. So especially if you're in New York City, like it'll be really relevant. But yeah, Patreon is a really cool place to connect with me. I'm working on engaging my patrons a little bit more and like maybe co-creating some songs with them. And yeah, it's just a really cool place to be able to support me, even for like just $3 a month, like makes a big difference in my life. So as I'm really trying to do a lot of like community activism work that doesn't have a paywall. So if people can support with like a small monthly donation, that does add up, you know. If 1,000 people donated $3 a month to me, like that would help me pay my rent. So that's like huge for me, because I actually haven't been getting a lot of like brand deals, and it's hard to find ethical, sustainable money sources, to be very honest, because it seems like our financial and economic reality is so corrupt. It's so relying on exploitation and exploiting the earth and her people. And so like, I'm trying to be outside of that as much as possible. And yeah, it really helps. And there's also a free option on Patreon as well. So I engage with the free community. And so yeah, just like reach out to me there. But of course, all support, even if it's just like commenting, sharing, liking my content, like it means a lot to me.
I love that. Yeah, we will definitely be linking everything in the description. So anyway, for people to follow and support your work, everyone listening, make sure you're going and supporting in some way. And yeah, I super appreciate you coming on today.
I love this convo. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of The Hopeful Environmentalist. To check out the resources in this episode or to join as a patron to support the work of The Hopeful Environmentalist, check out the description of this episode. And as always, remember to stay hopeful and create positive change.